This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Zach Zaidman.
You know, back in the day, I used to live the life. Not a Bieber life, but
no.
I used to live the life.
Zach Zaidman.
Are you serious?
That's an interesting question, Dave.
Fly the W!
4:32 for the Chicago Wolves update.
4:31.
Approaching 4:32 for the...
Just saw Zach fire an empty coffee cup.
It's Zach Zaidman on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com.
I thought it was Max Zaidman. I'm sorry.
Chicago Sports Station.
It was the English novelist Mary Ann Evans, better known to us by her pen name George Eliot, who wrote back in the 1800s, "It is never too late to be what you might have been." Is it true when it comes to the Chicago Bears? Happy New Year. A pleasant good afternoon to you. Zach Zaidman here until 4 o'clock on this New Year's Day, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Ahead on the show, what are the Cubs really doing this offseason? We'll ask Mark Gonzalez of the Chicago Tribune in about 20 minutes. At 1:40, the Bulls on a roll. What does it mean tonight in Milwaukee? We'll ask Rob Schaefer of NBC Sports Chicago. 85 Bear Tom Thayer will join us for the entire 2 o'clock hour. We'll talk Bears, Packers, NFL, and preview the college football playoff, including Notre Dame versus Alabama, later this afternoon. And then at 3 o'clock, we'll get the national perspective on Bears-Packers from NFL Network's Stacey Dales. Now, you're a big part of the show as well. 312-644-6767. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. First, though, a few thoughts. Now, over the final month of 2020, the Bears gave us a glimpse of just what might have been. Everything changed. For the most part, they went back to calling plays the only way the Bears have had success in our lifetime, by emphasizing the run first, because that's what you have to do to win when you don't have an elite quarterback. The balance has allowed Mitchell Trubisky to thrive over the past 4 games, the best stretch of his professional football life. The Bears averaged 35 points per game in the month of December. Let me repeat that. The Bears averaged, these Bears, the Bears you grew up watching, and these Bears today, averaged 35 points per game in the month of December. A consistent offensive explosion that the Bears haven't experienced since Gale Sayers' rookie season in 1965, when he set a league record by scoring 22 touchdowns. But we can't forget who this current stretch has come against: Detroit, Houston, Minnesota, and Jacksonville. Let's put it in context. There are 32 teams in the National Football League. The Jaguars are ranked last in defense. The Lions are ranked second to last. The Texans are ranked third to last. And the Vikings are ranked 27th in the league in defense. The Packers are not those teams. They're currently the top team in the NFC and need a win Sunday at Soldier Field to clinch the top seed in the conference. Not only are the Packers ranked first in the entire NFL in scoring, averaging 32 points per game, the Packers are ranked 7th in the NFL in defense, ahead of the Bears, who aren't even ranked in the top 10. Now, I love a great sports story as much as anyone. And if you've listened to me over the years, You know I'm generally as optimistic as they come. The way the Bears picked themselves off the mat after losing six straight, including loss number six, in crushing fashion at home to Detroit, well, it's been one of the most surprising stories in the NFL. First, it says a lot about head coach Matt Nagy, a true leader. He found a way to keep the locker room together when most teams would have shut it down. And it also says a lot about the guys in that locker room that they didn't shut it down. Nagy sacrificed his ego, somewhat. He gave up some play calling to offensive coordinator Bill Lazor. I won't say all of the play calling, because if you watch the Bears games, you can tell that Nagy is still calling plays, just not all of them. Watch the games. You'll see when Nagy is staring at his play sheet and barking the plays into the headset. That's when he's the play caller. When you don't see him doing that, Lazor is the one calling plays. But Nagy is no longer trying to fit Trubisky into the Kansas City offense. He's tweaked the offense to cater it to what Trubisky does best and who the Bears need to be in order to win. And that means running the ball, using play action to deceive opponents, taking advantage of Trubisky's mobility to cut the field in half and making decisions easier for him. It means using tempo to your advantage. It means remembering you have not one, but two really talented tight ends and using them effectively. And give Trubisky credit. Rather than sulk after he was benched, he did whatever he needed to do, both mentally and physically, to prepare himself to succeed when he got another opportunity. And that's exactly what he's done, and he deserves a ton of credit for that. But it's one thing to light up Detroit, Houston, Minnesota, and Jacksonville offensively. Green Bay is not those teams. And to be fair, we have not seen Trubisky play his best football against the best football teams in the NFL. The Bears have just one win this season against a winning team, Tampa Bay. And it was just a one-point win. Trubisky was on the bench for that one, and let's not forget what happened in that game against the Bucs. The Bucs committed a whopping 11 penalties for 109 yards, and arguably the greatest quarterback in the history of the game inexplicably forgot what down it was on his last offensive snap. You know who's also arguably the greatest quarterback in the history of the game? Aaron Rodgers. He's been facing the Bears every year since 2008 when he became a starter. That means he's been facing some really talented Bears defenses, first led by Brian Urlacher and now led by Khalil Mack. And he's dominated some of the best defensive minds in Bears history, from Lovie Smith and Rod Marinelli to Vic Fangio and Chuck Pagano. If you think what Trubisky has done in four games against four of the worst defenses in the league is impressive, I invite you to brace yourself for the following numbers. Aaron Rodgers is 19-5 against the Bears in his career. 51 touchdown passes, just 10 interceptions, a passer rating of 105.3. And I'm not even counting the biggest game Rodgers has won against the Bears, the 2010 NFC Championship game. But those numbers that I just read include the most meaningful regular season games between the Bears and Packers during the Rodgers era. The 2010 regular season finale at Lambeau, when Lovie Smith played all of his regulars to try and keep the Packers out of the playoffs, Green Bay still won and beat the Bears in the postseason on its way to winning the Super Bowl. There was the 2013 regular season finale. Winner advances to the playoffs, loser goes home. Bears were playing at Soldier Field, and we're still waiting for James Anderson to pick up that live ball that resulted in a Packers touchdown and a trip home for the Bears. Now, there will be some of you who say, don't forget, Zach, the Packers will be without a standout left tackle, David Bakhtiari. He's not going to play Sunday. Well, you know what? Bakhtiari didn't play for Detroit. He didn't play for Houston. He didn't play for Minnesota. He didn't play for Jacksonville. And that didn't help the Bears' pass rush. So why will things change Sunday? I hope I'm wrong. And that the Bears' offense controls the clock against a playoff team and Trubisky plays the signature game of his NFL career and the team scores touchdowns instead of settling for field goals. You don't see any mental mistakes. I hope I'm wrong. And the Bears' defense that was spectacular during the 5-1 start reemerges for a spectacular finish. That the pass rush that's been invisible returns with a vengeance. That the stars in the secondary look like stars again and take the ball away. But hope doesn't win games. Performance does. It's still not too late for the Bears to be what they thought they should be when they began the season 5-1. But four games don't make up for 4 years. To beat Green Bay, the Bears will need to do things that we haven't seen in order to turn hope into reality. Those are my thoughts. Plenty more Bears coming up at 2 o'clock with Tom Thayer. But immediately ahead, what exactly are the Cubs doing? That's next. Zach Zaidman with you until 4 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I think the market for prospects, you know, certainly is, you know, every single year, sort of the we have a there's a higher value of prospects, and I think that that certainly, you know, in a contracting financial market as an industry, as teams are, you know, as industry lost $3 billion, and as things contract, I do feel like, by definition, people are going to hold on tighter to those close to the big leagues prospects because those are cheap. You know, they're cheap, they're talented, and obviously, like I said, as you cut back money, those guys become more important. So I think that's a real factor. So I guess, listen, I would say, judging a trade return by what you wanted as opposed to what you got, I don't think is necessarily a great way to look at it. You know, I think, you know, people, you know, right away, you know, they, you know, oh my goodness, you know, we're going to acquire these three prospects, and then they're disappointed with what they got. When, you know, I think the reality is, I think I'm really excited about the return that we got. I think we got four talented young guys. And
that's Cubs president of baseball operations, Jed Hoyer, talking about the Yu Darvish deal when the Cubs made the trade earlier this week, sending Darvish and catcher Victor Caratini to San Diego for four prospects. At the time, we were told none of them are really major league ready for 2021. Cubs also get back veteran right-hander Zach Davies. A lot of people are throwing their hands up in the air like, this wasn't what we were told when the offseason started in terms of some of the changes that the Cubs were going to make. So what exactly are the Cubs doing this offseason? Zach Zaidman with you here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Let's try to get some answers. Joining us now on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline is our good friend from the Chicago Tribune, Mark Gonzalez, who covers the Cubs for the Trib. Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Gonzo, how you doing? Good afternoon.
I'm okay, Zach. How are you?
I'm well. Happy New Year. It's definitely a different kind of year for the Cubs. Can you help try to put it into perspective and context? What are they doing this offseason?
stay tuned, because there's more in store. I think the first step was to fortify the farm system, which they did in that trade with the Padres. Getting four young players builds depth. I know people are kind of wondering about that, and rightfully so. There's an old saying, a scout once told me that if you're waiting for prospects, you're waiting to get fired. But in this case, it definitely is I think they didn't say it, but it looks to be an admission that we're looking more towards, you know, 2023, 2024, when some of these guys might come on stage and be ready. Having said that, in order to build your farm system, sometimes you need to make trades like this, and the cost is actually cheaper, because if you were to go out in the international market and try to get those guys, well, you have only so many X amount of dollars before you're paying penalties. So that's one area where they were able to address it in volume and quality, we think. So, but my biggest issue with this whole trade was not getting at least another starting pitcher or getting someone who was under control for more years, because Davies did have a good year last year, but he's going to be a free agent after 2021. So you're almost back to the drawing board as far as starting pitching depth. But I think that's something Jed will address down the road.
Talking with Mark Gonzalez about the Cubs. So help me understand this. Were the Cubs looking to deal Darvish, or was this a unique opportunity that was presented because of the background that the guys running the Padres have with Darvish?
I think it was probably a little both, where I don't think Jed was throwing specifically Darvish's name out there, but if there's somebody out there biting, he's certainly going to listen. And I think that's how it all came apart. And as far as matches go, you know, first of all, he had limited no trade clause. It was down to 12 teams that he could veto a trade to. And I'm sure the Padres were not on that list. You know, who wouldn't want to go to San Diego if they had that option? So, and then we factor in the background with AJ Preller and that association with Darvish going back to the Rangers. You could start connecting the dots there. And then the fact that their farm system is really, really deep. And it's pretty impressive what they've been able to do, getting Snell and Darvish without giving up their big ticket prospect guys, and still have one of the better farm systems in baseball. Not top five as they once had, but I'm sure it's in the upper half of baseball.
When it comes to Darvish and his Cubs career, what a remarkable transformation when you consider the way this city thought about Darvish after his first year as a Cub to what this city thinks about him now on the week that he's been traded.
Yeah, and during the conference call yesterday, when you could see him break down, that pretty much told you how he felt about his whole time in Chicago, just the fact that there were still fans supporting him through the tough times, and then he was able to not only carry the torch, but really be that guy. You know, we all remember what David Ross said, that when he starts, it's win day. That speaks volumes about how much confidence they had in the guy. And not only that, but he had a terrific sense of humor, got along with his teammates well. It was a learning process, I think, for everybody, just getting to know this guy and him getting to know Chicago and his teammates. And it really, I think, was a pleasant time for everybody around him for the last year and a half.
You know, Mark, I had a long conversation with Darvish after he made his return to Dodger Stadium for the first time since losing Game 7 of the 2017 World Series, and he's with the Cubs. And it was a very emotional night for him, because I don't think any of us realized just psychologically how much he was damaged from the Astros cheating scandal, because he didn't know it at the time. We didn't know it at the time. But clearly that had a major impact on him. It wasn't just the physical aspects that needed to be repaired when he initially joined the Cubs. It was him needing to be repaired emotionally and mentally because of how it ended in L.A.
Yeah, I'd say that one was one measuring stick for him, because I remember it as well. I didn't talk to him at length like you had the opportunity to do so, but I believe everything he conveyed to you about that being a huge box that was checked off, because there were so many things that the fallout from that, those losses to the Astros and all the runs he gave up and what the Dodgers gave up to get him, and just the pain, you know, especially when you lose a Game 7, probably nothing worse for a starter than to lose Game 7, you know, biggest stage at all. I think also the other big box he checked off was when he faced Arrieta, because a lot of people were looking, oh, we got this guy, why don't we keep Jake and all that, and then he pitched against him a year and a half after he signed with the Cubs and pitched very, very well for five plus innings and probably could have won that game with a little more support. But the fact that he did pitch well and held his own and probably outpitched Jake in some ways, I think, was another turning point. But getting back to the Dodgers, for him personally, yeah, I definitely think that was a big turning point in his ascent with the Cubs.
Yeah, and for him to be able to regain his dominance after all those things that we just talked about says a lot about him as a person, as a competitor, as an athlete, and the fact that he will be missed. So let's look ahead now. We're talking with Mark Gonzalez, talking some Cubs here on the Score. So what is the goal in 2021 for the Cubs? If you've been able to kind of sift through what you're hearing publicly and privately, and be able to give us an idea of exactly what this organization is looking to do.
Well, I have to take a step back first by saying that the trade that is completed starts the foundation for the farm system again, where by the time that they feel they're ready to compete, they'll never see this publicly, because I know they want to make it seem like they still have a chance to win the division, and who knows, with a couple of additions, maybe they do win the division because it's very winnable. But I think getting that foundation, strengthening that foundation for the farm system was important. But I think now I think they definitely have to get more controllable young starting pitching. I think that's a necessity, because you just can't rely on what you have currently in the system with guys a year or two away. And then definitely get some athletes, especially in the outfield, guys that can get tracked down the ball, that can get that extra base, ball hitting the gap, stretching to a double or a triple. I think they want to get more athletic, and I think those are the things they'll try to address.
When you look at what's happened the last 3 years, we tend to lump the last 6 years together, but it's really two separate sequences. You had the first 3 years, 15, 16, and 17, with unparalleled success, deep playoff runs all three seasons, including the championship most Cubs fans never thought they'd see in 2016. And then there's 18, 19, and 20, where the Cubs went to the playoffs twice in that three-year span, but zero playoff wins to show for it. And clearly, this is an organization that aspires for much more than just reaching the playoffs. They want to win championships. So when we zoom out and we look at what they're starting to do, is this about creating another championship window opportunity?
Yes. And I think you broke it down perfectly, slicing the six-year run into two parts. And I always point to 2018 at the time. They should have started moving some guys. But, you know, having said that, now's the time where they got to, you know, look more, do something to show that they're looking ahead. I know Theo said at Cubs convention last year that, you know, there's going to be a transition period where you start looking for more guys to be the pillars of the organization, whether it be an Ian Happ, or if you hope that Nico Hoerner crystallizes into a bona fide first round talent. Wilson Contreras at the time is a guy that you look for to be one of those pillars. And I think now, more so than ever, you got to look at those, get some guys, or at least hope some guys develop, you know, deeper down, lower, you know, the Brendan Davises, the Braylon Marquez, those type of guys. You hope their talents really start to crystallize to where they hit the ground running in the majors and can make an impact, not necessarily next year, but in ensuing years.
Yeah, I think what they're trying to do is take advantage of the fact that seemingly everybody, and I don't know if the words rebuilding, retooling, resetting, whatever you want to call it, but everyone in the NL Central is doing that to some effect. So take advantage of the division being a little bit weaker. If you can make the playoffs, great. And also there's an extra opportunity to get into the playoffs. I think that's something that we haven't really spent a lot of time talking about. But when you look at Major League Baseball overall, is it good for the game that essentially we've got maybe a handful of teams, five or six teams, that are truly all in heading into the 2021 season, and everyone else is kind of like what the Cubs are? You're trying to reshuffle the deck in order to create better opportunities for you in the future.
Now, I really don't like it, especially, you know, I pay a lot of attention to what goes on in the National League, especially in the East and what's transpired there. With the Marlins sneaking up on everybody pitching wise, and then you have the Mets under new ownership, you know, talking big, and they're probably going to do some big things, much bigger than just getting a catcher. Then you have the Nats, who made an interesting trade for Josh Bell, hoping that he turns things around. And then, you know, the Braves are defending champions. So it looks like an arms race in that division. Then you see what the Padres did, you know, fighting back to see how they can overtake the Dodgers and addressing it with pitching, something the Dodgers have been very dominant at. So then you look at the Central, and it's just other than the Pirates, you can make a case for any of those four teams that win division, and they haven't really done anything. And like you said, they might be hitting the reset button. So I kind of don't like what's going on in baseball, but I do understand, you know, we're in the midst of a pandemic, and you know, revenues are impacted by this. So we'll see how it plays out. But I just think that there is definitely a competitive imbalance.
And then you get to the point where you start thinking ahead to 2022. The current collective bargaining agreement runs out after 2021. And just seeing the way things are happening on both sides, we could be headed for a major labor war. And you began, I think the public started to realize it last year when they had so much difficulty just trying to agree to a season in the middle of a pandemic. But it makes you think that this is in large part why we're seeing what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, and I think if we don't start the season on time and maybe it's trimmed to 120 games, I think that acrimony is only going to heighten between the players and MLB management. So keep an eye on that as well. I know we're in the midst of a pandemic and we got to check a lot of boxes in terms of health and safety protocols, but I'm sure the players are feeling if we made it through 60 games and there's a vaccine, why can't we play a full schedule? And I'm not a doctor, but I'm sure they're thinking that. And I think on the flip side, the owners are saying, well, we still can't open all our stadiums and invite fans. Therefore, you know, revenues are impacted. But it just seemed like there's a serious lack of trust going on.
Yeah, great point. Our final few moments talking Cubs with the Chicago Tribune's Mark Gonzalez here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. All right, I've waited to the end to ask about the biggest name. And his name has been bandied about really for the last full year. What is Chris Bryant's future with this team?
I think, and I've gone 180 on this, I still think that he's going to be part of this for at least start of the season. And I say that because I think we're at the point where I think if they felt there was something they'd get back in return that was helpful, they would have moved him already. And I think that was the plan going into last year pre-pandemic where, okay, he was going to stay with the team, but if it fell out of contention, then he was probably the first guy to go. But now here we are in a pandemic. He was banged up last year, so certainly teams are probably going to want to see how he bounces back and then take it from there. But I see him being a part of this team going into 2021 just because of those reasons. I still think he's got a lot left in the tank, but I think any interested team would be curious to see what he can do. And I think the teams that are going to be interested are certainly going to be playoff contenders, because I don't think anybody who's, you know, run-of-the-mill team would be interested unless they have the serious resources to sign him to an extension before he becomes a free agent.
Now, Gonzo, before the Zoom conference with Jed Hoyer earlier this week, there was a report out there that Wilson Contreras was going to be the next to go, and Hoyer shot that down immediately. Does that mean that Contreras is a lock to remain a Cub, or does it mean that that's just not true at this particular time?
I think at this particular time, it's not true. I just think I honestly felt that if they were to move somebody other than the big three, Baez, Bryant, and Rizzo, it would have been Contreras and not Darvish. But since Darvish already moved, I think teams will probably look at Contreras, and I would take it further to say maybe the teams that lose out in the Real Muto sweepstakes probably start asking with more intensity about Contreras.
Great stuff. Mark Gonzalez, thank you so much. Always appreciate when you share your insight with us.
Anytime, Zach. Take care.
You too. Happy New Year. Mark Gonzalez talking some Cubs with us here on The Score. Got to take a break. When we come back, the Bulls are streaking. They've won two in a row. What does it mean heading into tonight's showdown in Milwaukee. We'll find out next. Zach Zaidman with you until 4 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Hashimura down the floor, throws it ahead, off the fingertips of Bryant, picked up in backcourt by Otto Porter Jr. Ball game over. Bulls win. Bulls win. Bulls win. The Underman Bulls take it to the Wiz, 133-130.
Yeah, impressive stuff last night from the Bulls on the road in Washington, taking their second consecutive game from the Wizards this week. And you heard Chuck say it, shorthanded. Archidiakono, Satoransky, Markkanen, Hutchinson were all out because of health and safety protocols. That's the way they're terming it in the NBA this season. Zach Zaidman with you until 4 o'clock this afternoon. There is Bulls basketball tonight. They're in Milwaukee for a showdown against the Bucks. 6:45 pregame right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And joining us now on the Al Bamonte Nissan Hotline is Rob Schaefer from NBC Sports Chicago. He covers the Bulls. Al Bamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue or apnissan.com. Rob, good afternoon. Happy New Year. Thank you for joining us. What did you learn about the Bulls based on what they had to overcome to pick up another win last night, or I should say yesterday afternoon in Washington?
Yeah, Zach, thanks for having me. I think there was a lot to learn last night. I think picking up a second consecutive win for this team is something that shouldn't be underrated. We could talk about the Wizards being lowly competition, which is certainly true. As much as they do have that superstar talent at the top with Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal, this is a team that I think will be in the conversation for the worst defense in the NBA for a lot of the season. I think that bore out over these two games. But that aside, to go on the road, to pick up two in a row, this is a team that was 3-18 coming off of wins last season. So picking up these types of results in a string is something that comes rare. And then when you look at the game itself, especially last night, you know, the old cliche is the NBA is a game of runs. You saw that aplenty throughout this one. In the second quarter, there was a Wizards run of 10-0 that put them up 7 that the Bulls responded to end up leading by the half. Then coming out of the half, the Wizards go on a 10-2 run out of the break. The Bulls end the third quarter up 7, responding to that. And then you saw late game execution-wise, there were, you know, a number of well-timed defensive plays, especially from Zach LaVine getting that block on Russell Westbrook late. You know, getting to the foul line, getting open looks, 34 assists on the night, and the offense was humming. So I think that response to adversity, that resiliency is something that we haven't seen from this team this year. There were games in the past, especially that Indiana game, where runs by opponents pretty much took the Bulls out of it, mentally checked them out, and those results ended up being a little bit more uncompetitive than this one was. So I think that's a step in the right direction for a young team adjusting to a new coach. Billy Donovan certainly called it a step in the right direction. So did Thad Young talking to us afterwards. So I think the fact that this team has shown a level of growth to be able to not lie down when adversity strikes over the course of these first five games is certainly encouraging. Again, the qualifier that the competition is not necessarily anything to write home about. Reality strikes with the Bucks tonight and the Mavericks on Sunday. But I think showing that level of growth for a young team, I think is certainly something to take away and something that you could say that we learned about the Bulls over this road trip.
Yeah, Rob, you make a great point, because more so than wins and losses this season, you're kind of analyzing the Bulls through a nuanced landscape where you're trying to see the game-to-game growth and development of this team and as it takes Billy Donovan's nature. So when you watch them offensively, like, for example, tonight, if you're watching the Bulls or listening here on The Score against one of the best teams in the NBA in Milwaukee, what are you looking for offensively to give you an idea that they're getting what Billy Donovan wants them to do out there on the floor?
Well, I think when the ball is pinging around, I think that's something that Billy stressed a lot when he was laying out his offensive philosophy before the season: ball movement, player movement, cutting, quick decisions. It's another NBA cliche, point fiving it, making a decision about whether you're going to pass, drive, or shoot within a half second of catching the ball. I think when the Bulls, and we can talk about individual players on the team, I think watching Kobe White's progress running the offense, he had his first double-double of his career last night with 10 assists. that's certainly, you know, a benchmark for him to clear that's important. But on a team-wide basis, I just think that level of decisiveness, when they're getting downhill and getting to the free throw line, I haven't checked their ranking today, but they entered last night second in the NBA in free throw attempts per game. I think that would have gone down. I don't think they got to that 29 free throw mark that they were at. But that's something that this team hasn't done well in the past is, you know, kind of get downhill, put their head down and get to the rim. Last season, we saw a lot of settling. You know, it was the integration of a new offensive system. And that actually reared its head last night a little bit, I think, kind of settling for shots. But you saw them kind of snap themselves out of it. So I think getting downhill and, you know, I mentioned that 34 assist number. That's a huge number beyond the fact that it almost reached the Jim Boylan holy grail of 35 assists a game. Beyond that, it's just a significant number to show that this offense is a little bit more egalitarian. Guys are making quick decisions. And, you know, when you take that time, when there's that lag in the decision-making process in the NBA, and you give defenses time to adjust, it can really stall and stagnate your offense. I thought the Bulls did a good job in those two games of taking advantage of an advantageous matchup, a Wizards team that isn't fearsome defensively. And it seems like they worked a couple kinks out. It seems like they got into a little bit of a rhythm, even without, unfortunately, Lauri Markkanen for basically a game and a half of that, who I thought was also finding his groove in the new offense, getting on the move more, running off screens, getting to the foul line, you know, early season, but at a rate that was more than he has in his career to this point. So I think those quick decisions are what I'd be looking for. This Bucks team is a team that has been really a historically great defense for the last two regular seasons. They're obviously not off to the start that they would have hoped to this season necessarily. But when you talk about just the defensive personnel that they have, from Giannis to Brook Lopez to Drew Holiday, new addition in their backcourt, Chris Middleton, that this is really going to be a test of seeing if those new good habits that they're trying to build can really hold up against top-tier competition. It's going to be a really interesting measuring stick in that regard.
Talking Bulls with Rob Schaefer from NBC Sports Chicago here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Now the tough part. Defensively, that, you know, anyone who watched the Bulls the last few years, you know that is such a major issue for this team. Anyone who watched the opener this season, you saw how upset Billy Donovan was with the lack of passion and purpose on that side of the floor. What's it supposed to look like? When it's finally going right for them defensively, what's it going to look like?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think personnel-wise, they're a little bit more limited than they were last season, when they did have moments of being a really, really competitive defensive team. Now, a lot of that goes into having the personnel of Chris Dunn and Shaq Harrison towards the end of the season started playing more. Those are two great perimeter defenders. Jim Boylan obviously implemented a pretty aggressive scheme that forced a lot of turnovers. That has gotten dialed back this season, and with the loss of those two guys, really mainly Chris Dunn, it's definitely been a step back, and I don't know that the ceiling defensively of this team is incredibly high because of that. I just think personnel-wise, when you look at the individual defensive talent on this roster, it's not anything that's going to bowl you over. I think when it works, you know, I think the point about competitiveness and effort is a good one. You see that, you know, especially from the guard spots in terms of fighting over screens. Billy Donovan has talked about, you know, for Coby White and Zach LaVine, improvement areas being making opposing guards feel them on the defense, or for the opposing guards on the offensive side of the ball. So I think that would be a sign of progress there. I think Wendell Carter Jr., who came into this season, I think pretty much billed as the defensive anchor of this team. He called himself that, talking to us in training camp. He hasn't necessarily, you know, he's had his moments. It's been a bit of a rocky start for him, up and down. He's found his footing a little bit offensively, it seems, in spurts, but defensively I still don't think he's playing up to a standard that he would say is his standard. Last night, you know, he was basically subbed out because the Wizards were going at him in 1-5 and 2-5 pick and rolls a little bit down the stretch, and they went with Thad Young at small ball center, and he made some plays, he made some stuff happen. I thought Thad was tremendous in his season debut. I don't know how you could have expected anything more from him. The kid 15-6 and two steals and played 27 minutes after really only playing 5-on-5 once in the last month. That was pretty incredible. So I think that addition helps. Otto Porter Jr. has been a bit of a steadying presence. I think Wendell is, as he, you know, you hope as he gets more acclimated to his new role on both sides, dropping a little bit more. And as the season goes out, he can kind of work his way into kind of midseason form. You hope that he comes around a little bit more on that end. And then I think, you know, what it just looks like is competitiveness, effort. I don't think they're ever going to be really even an above-average defensive team at their ceiling. But they do have enough pieces that they can, on a night-to-night basis, compete probably a little bit better than they did in those first two games, certainly. And even in the two Wizards games, you know, you get a big win last night, but they gave up 130 points. And the Wizards had a number of big-time performances. Thomas Bryant, I think, was 10 of 11 from the field. You know, if the Bulls, if a couple things don't break their way, that's the story today, is how porous the defense was. I think just because of the way the game breaks, you know, they win, and we can talk about the ball movement and the offense looking great, and, oh, it's two straight wins and it's a response to adversity. But there's a lot of ways that game could have gone. I don't think the defense can be forgotten about. So we'll just see how that progresses. That's another area to watch against Milwaukee tonight, because they present a ton of size, a ton of physicality, especially inside. The Bulls were not defending the paint well in the first two games of the season. And they rebounded on that front against the Wizards and against the Warriors, two teams that aren't as big and physical inside. But if Milwaukee was to give them trouble there, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
All right, a couple of quick things before we say goodbye here. So Archer Diakono, Satoransky, Hutchinson, we know they're out because of the health and safety protocols with the virus. Markkanen's been dealing with the calf injury. What's the latest that you can share about his health status?
Yeah, so for Lowry, Billy Donovan told us yesterday that he was questionable really up until the time that he got ruled out from being in health and safety protocol. He was going to go and try out the calf pregame. Billy Donovan told us that there was a chance that he was going to be ruled out with the calf, but he was basically in the same spot that he was in for the first Wizards game, where he was going to try it out, possibly play. But then obviously he gets yanked out for the health and safety protocol issue, which we don't know the specifics of. We don't know if those four players may have tested positive or inconclusive themselves, if they may have just been in close contact with someone and it's an abundance of caution quarantine. We just don't know. Obviously, as you mentioned, we do know that they won't be available for the Milwaukee game tonight. We'll see how that progresses moving forward. But with Markkanen, I don't think the calf is at a point where it's ringing alarm bells yet, because it was at a point where he was going to try to play last night before the health and safety protocol issue. But just got to see how that progresses.
All right, and as we say goodbye here, I thought you did a terrific piece on the connection between Billy Donovan and Becky Hammon, who this week made history as the person to act as head coach of an NBA team with San Antonio after Greg Popovich got ejected. Can you share a little bit of that connection between those two?
Sure, yeah. So, yeah, I asked Billy Donovan pregame last night, you know, what he thought of Becky Hammon getting that tap up after the Greg Popovich ejection. She coached the back part of that game on Wednesday, I think that was. And, you know, interestingly enough, they do have a few shared connections, Billy Donovan and Becky Hammon. Billy Donovan's son, Billy Donovan III, who is obviously in a video coordinator role with the Bulls now. At one point in his path up through kind of working his way up in the NBA coaching ranks, he worked with the Spurs G League affiliate, where Billy Donovan said he got to know Becky Hammon a little bit, speaks highly of her. Donovan and Becky crossed paths at the NBA coaches meetings, which are held annually. She was there, I think, representing the Spurs because Greg Popovich was gone coaching the Olympic team. So Billy said that they got to work with each other a little bit on the court. And, you know, in doing that, he just saw kind of the high character of Becky, how strong her work ethic is, how talented of a coach she is. And, he basically closed the statement by saying, you know, it's not a surprise to him that she does seem to be in the conversation for an NBA head coaching gig pretty much every year as vacancies open up. It obviously hasn't happened for her to this point. But, you know, I don't think that would surprise anybody if that were to happen soon. It was a cool bit of history on Wednesday. And I think when you look at Becky's path from, you know, if you name a Colorado State women's basketball record, and she has it back in the 90s from her time of playing there, a 16-year WNBA career where she was just, you know, a fantastic point guard. And then, you know, to the way that she's built a name for herself in the NBA world as an assistant in San Antonio, it wouldn't be a surprise to anybody. I don't think Billy Donovan, I don't think me or you or anyone, if there's more history to be made in her future.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time before I think she gets control of a team as the full-time head coach. Hey, Rob, thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
Good to talk to you, Zach. Thanks.
Rob Schaefer, who covers the Bulls for NBC Sports Chicago. You can catch his work at nbcsports.com/Chicago. When we come back, Bears, Packers, Tom Thayer, your phone calls. Tom will join us for the entire hour. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Of course, we'll talk a little bit about the college football playoff. Notre Dame playing Alabama. Maybe the Irish find a way to make it close. And if you make it close, you've got a chance. But as we all know, it's been rough going in those big bowl games for the Irish the last few years. But your questions for Tom, Bears, Packers, Notre Dame, and more at 312-644-6767. That's next. Zach Zabin with you until 4 o'clock on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love, all streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.